Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Is becoming more and more perplexing. Because I think we started looking at this agreement or this MOU that, as I mentioned yesterday, we are told now is a page and a half. And as I said, hopefully in very, very, very small font, because I don't know how you have an MOU, any form of agreement of this nature in a page and a half. We don't even really know what's in it. It's being leaked all over the show. I don't know what's real. If it is as good as Trump says it is, well then, why isn't he showing it to us? The whole thing is very, very perplexing. And like many of us, I do know that Shabbos Kestenbaum has been following this very, very closely. A very good morning to you. Good evening. Firstly, thank you for staying up to speak to us. Where are we finding you this evening?
You are finding me in Los Angeles, where it is 9:14 in the evening. So good evening to you.
Okay, good evening to you. And I know that you've also obviously been very, very close to the story. Please provide me with clarity that I definitely do not have. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question. I think you have a lot of different constituencies, even within the MAGA camp, such as myself, who are scratching their heads. I'll say it as follows. Before we get into the details, it's important for your viewers to understand the Memorandum of Understanding, the MOU, has not actually been released. So everything we're discussing tonight and everything that has been discussed on social media within the national press, it really is speculation. Vice President J.D. Vance, I don't believe, has done a very good job at articulating what this deal is, mostly due to the fact that he's contradicted himself repeatedly in the various interviews he's been giving. And it's also important to point out he's the only administration official who's actually giving interviews. Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, who are considered more hawkish, they've actually remained MIA the last 48 hours.
Which is significant in of itself.
Which is incredibly significant. I mean, you have to remember that when we first launched this war 3-4 months ago, it was really Hegseth and Rubio who were leading the charge, saying that this is in the interest of the American people. So I think their silence speaks volumes. So just one quick example is the $300 billion. So J.D. Vance starts off the morning saying that is the United States that's going to provide $300 billion to the Iranian regime. He then corrects himself about 30 minutes later on a different program saying that no money will be going to the Iranians. Then, of course, on Sean Hannity's show, he says, actually, there will be $300 billion, but it'll be given by the Gulf states, which is sort of unclear why any Gulf nation, the UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait, would be giving any type of financial investment into Iran, considering Iran just spent the last 4 months lobbying ballistic missiles into their country. So there are a lot of details that are just really unknown and unclear. But just to, again, underscore to your viewers and anyone listening, the biggest concerns I have is if the reported MOU is in fact the MOU, the biggest obstacle is, number one, there's no mention of dismantling the nuclear program or the ballistic missile program. It's sort of trust but verify, but we won't even verify. We'll just trust that they do it. There's no commitment to ending Iran's support for any of their proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis. But at the same time, the MOU has immediate sanction relief from the moment the MOU is signed. You have another pledge of about $100 billion in Iranian frozen assets being freed up. And again, that's only tied to quote-unquote progress, but it's totally unclear what progress actually means. So this, to me, reeks of the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was the Obama-Iranian deal that people like President Trump spoke up so strongly against. And I think the underlying question as well is, why do this? You know, why now? For what purpose? For what reason? I have my own speculation and theories, but ultimately this is very, to use your word, it's very perplexing. And many people who've been very loyal to this president are trying to understand and make sense of this.
I was just trying to imagine what dinner at the Obama's house looked like earlier, well, for you this evening, because they must be having the best time ever.
Of course. Obama gave an interview this morning, and he feels incredibly vindicated. He even said that my deal was a heck of a lot better than Trump's deal. So if you're President Obama, you're Jake Patrick Sullivan, this is a pretty good day for you.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to be a good day for the a world who values freedom. What would you think or what would you suggest is the motivating factor here? Because there has to have been. There's little doubt that this is one of those examples where defeat was snatched from the jaws of victory. There's little doubt that pushed a little bit further, or maybe even a lot further, but either way, this wasn't the deal that Iran should have achieved. What is the motivating factor, in your view?
Yeah, well, first let me just validate the question, because it's a really good one. If you look at the White House's, on their website, they have five essentially talking points, and the chief talking point is that, quote, Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. But that's not really a term. That's just an aspiration. That's an objective. The question is, how do you plan on doing that? And it remains entirely elusive. So in terms of why is this happening, look, there have been theories left and right. I have a hunch. I mean, this is a real conspiracy over here. But President Trump needs the MAGA agenda to be fulfilled. He needs policies and legislation enacted. And the only way you can do that is by preserving and really expanding the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. So in the United States, we have the midterm elections coming up in November. And if you want to preserve and expand the Republican majority, you can't have the American people paying at the pumps for gas what they are currently paying at the pumps for gas. So I'm in California, it's about $6.50, but the average is about $4.50, which is quite high. Gas prices don't change overnight. They're quite stagnant and difficult to push. So this takes a couple of months. And so something that I'm compelled to believe in is President Trump was faced with two bad options. Keep the war going, which he really does believe is in the best interest of the American people. In fact, he said it explicitly aboard Air Force One about 2 months ago when he was asked by a reporter at Axios, what do you say to the American people who don't support this war and it's not politically expedient? He says, did it ever occur to you I'm not doing this because it's politically expedient, but rather I'm doing it because I believe it's right, which is a really remarkable thing for an elected official, let alone the President of the United States, to say. At the same time, though, I think it's entirely possible he was convinced by those who are more in tune with the political culture of, no, we really do need Republican wins. And that means we need to bring the current hostilities to an end. And one of the ways you bring it to an end is with this type of deal and negotiation that will bring down prices, that will alleviate many of the concerns the American people have, and that will take us to November. What happens after November, should, please God, the Republicans preserve and maintain their majority, I'm open to the fact that President Trump will say, look, Iran negged on their side of the bargain, and we have to go back and do what we should have done a year ago. And the only difference is President Trump doesn't have to worry about any more midterms. So that's a theory that maybe I'm naive to believe. Maybe I'm trying to hold out for hope. But it's certainly plausible, because other explanations don't really provide solace as to why President Trump, who's really been a peace through strength president, who was not afraid to kill Soleimani, who was not afraid to blow up Isfahan Natanz for dough, why he would seemingly back himself into a corner and sign an MOU that reeks of the JCPOA.
I've seldom seen a turning on a person like we've seen on President Trump over the last few days. People that have sworn allegiance to him, who have been extremely loyal, are feeling very, very much betrayed. Some of the comments that he's made about Syria perhaps doing a better job with Hezbollah, talking about, it's an absurdity. Some of the things that are coming out of his mouth, actually, he seems possessed in a way. You can't imagine that this is the same, saying that it was never about regime change when it's in writing. You know, it's an absurdity. He's not a stupid man. He has to know that how this is being received from a very loyal base. If we think about where he was at when he addressed Knesset some months ago versus if he were to walk into Knesset tomorrow or today, this is a very different world. How do you think he's dealing with this?
Yeah.
What do you think's happening?
Yeah, I was actually looking at some opinion polls within the Israeli electorate from this morning, and essentially it's the total inverse of the Israeli people's perceptions of Donald Trump 3 months ago when he spoke at the Knesset and their perceptions of Donald Trump today. I mean, it's literally flipped itself, which is quite remarkable. Look, I can't cast aspersions on his inner motivations. So ultimately, I think the only plausible theory I have is what I just described earlier. At the same time, though, you know, I am biased. I helped out on the campaign. I still support the president. And there are many reasons why, which I'm happy to get into. But I think it'd be very dangerous for the Jewish community and the pro-Israel community in the United States, broadly speaking, to sort of cast President Trump aside and say this is the ultimate betrayal. And, you know, where do we go from here? I think everyone needs to take a breath. As I said from the get-go, the MOU itself hasn't actually been publicized. So it could be we're all talking about things that aren't actually real. I'm not sure if that's the case, but,
yeah,
but it
because,
could be the case.
You know, because there's a simple solution to that is show it to us.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because that's exactly what I posted on my Twitter last night. And I was really shocked at the vitriol in response. I had literally just posted to an open letter to the White House saying, get Marco Rubio on the air to explain the deal because we still don't know what it entails. And JD is openly contradicting himself. And the vitriol I got from both the far right and the far left for opposing reasons was fascinating. So the far right would say, you know, shut up, move to Israel and go die for them. And the far left was saying, this is a total surrender, which is just remarkable because a week ago, the far left was saying that Trump is a war criminal and hands off Iran. And now they're saying that Trump is a coward and he's surrendering to Iran. So they're trying to have it both ways. But ultimately, I think this was a politically calculated decision. I still have faith that so long as that naval fleet is surrounding the Iranian regime and the Strait of Hormuz still has American military deterrence, I still think it's premature for the pro-Israel space to cast off President Trump and to ignore the major policy successes that he has had. The fact that the American hostages are free from Gaza, the fact that Soleimani is dead, the fact that the embassy is in Jerusalem, the Golan Heights is recognized, that the war in Gaza is over. I mean, these are major accomplishments, and I think those major accomplishments do outweigh this very bizarre, murky deal, the details of which we still haven't officially finalized.
I think that perspective is really, really important because when I think you can't, it's hard to discount the hurt that Jews and Israel supporters around the world have been feeling in the last 3 years. And the fact that we had somebody or have maybe still somebody so strongly on the side of good in the world versus evil, on the side of Western democratic values, I think has been a lifeline to us, to Jews around the world, Israel supporters around the world, etc., and to Israel, of course. That makes this potentially much more painful when somebody like that, perceived to be like that, is perceived to have turned. And I think what you're saying is so important that just keep your head about you for now until we see how this plays out. Is that an accurate assessment of your advice?
I would say that's an accurate assessment of my advice. You don't have to support the deal, but to throw the baby out with the bathwater, say, is premature as well as immature. Because remember, number one, American electoral politics are binary, meaning there's one winner and there's one loser. If the Republicans lose the Senate majority, the House majority, I mean, forget about the Iranian nuclear deal. You can forget about a strong U.S.-Israel alliance, strong Israel U.S. relationship. I mean, it is over. The candidates in the Democratic Party who are winning their primaries all across the country, from Graham Plattner, Mr. Nazi tattoo, to Chris Robb, who believes that the Bondi Beach massacre was a false flag committed by the Zionists. These are dangerous, dangerous individuals. And so we can have legitimate policy disagreements internally, and we can certainly have legitimate criticisms against this particular deal. But you have to keep in mind there's only one political party that still believes in peace through strength. There's one political party that actually believes that Iran is a threat and that we should deal with it in some way. And unfortunately, it's not the Democratic Party. It is the Republican Party. So if we can move President Trump and move Republican members of Congress, the majority of whom are actually quite skeptical of this deal, if we can move them to recognize what Trump had been saying really up until this point, which is the IRGC can't be trusted, which is you don't negotiate with terrorists, you kill terrorists, I think we will be better off. But it's very, very dangerous what I'm seeing on social media, very dangerous what I'm hearing from my friends who are in this space, who are using really grandiose language against the president, that this is the ultimate betrayal, this is a second Holocaust, Israel is alone. Gosh. Those types of narratives are not only not true, but they're incredibly unhelpful and damaging to the cause.
I want to tell you that you've made a difference to how I see this. And it hasn't changed, of course, my view on the deal itself. But I do think that this perspective is really, really important. And I really thank you for that. And I appreciate you coming at it with this type of rational thinking. And I'd love our listeners to give me their view. Give me your view, 061-895-1019. Can you find a way to deal with this in a rational way, even acknowledging? And we shouldn't say something is good if it's not, just because it comes from somebody who has in the past been a very strong supporter. But to find nuance and balance. Shabbos Kestenbaum, thank you as always. Greatly, greatly enjoy and appreciate chatting to you.